Okay, so my talk is about transitioning from a batch ETL pipeline to a streaming ETL with Apache Apex. I'm Apache Apex PMC member, and I have been working on the project since its inception in 2012. And the use case that I'm going to talk about is an actual production use case that was first implemented in 2014. So I'm going to walk through the use case, and then the second part of the presentation will be to show you some of the building blocks that are available in Apache Apex to build such functionality yourself. So I think it's a fairly typical scenario to take an existing batch pipeline that doesn't meet the latency requirement and have the need to implement that with streaming and have faster time to insight and the ability to utilize the data when it's fresh. So first, quickly, Apex, where does it fit in? So we have sources of data, and we have ways to deliver the data for processing, which you probably, most of you probably know Kafka, and there are a few other ways to store and move data. And then to build an actual pipeline, you would use a platform like Apex that can do processing, where you can define a pipeline out of building blocks that expresses the processing logic that you need. And those could be things like filtering and joins and deduplication and other operations. And in a streaming system, also windowing operations, of course. And what happens normally after this processing is done, the results are landed in syncs. And syncs are very often syncs, or today still files, and databases. And one interesting aspect of that is that sometimes you don't need to land the data in the database before you can make use of it. And that's what this use case is about here. You might have heard about queryable state, and there are a few other terms for that, but the idea that you actually use the data that is already available in the streaming pipeline and can access that. And that's why there is one possible sync you could think is a front-end system or a dashboard system that gets the data. You can place queries and you get the results, and you can get it with low latency because it doesn't have to be copied into another external system before you can access it. So the use case is from the edtech industry. It's real-time. It's basically the functionality is that we get click streams and impression streams and auction data from ad servers, and we want to bring that data into a format that allows for real-time reporting, but also for monitoring to detect important trends in a campaign, but also for training machine models, and also to feed it back into the allocation engine. So edtech is in edtech, real-time processing is important because generally, you would want to quickly react to events, and if campaigns don't go in the direction that you expect, then you want to adjust them, right? You want to make changes, maybe you want to stop it, or you don't want to spend money on things that are not profitable. And that's the goal that edtech companies pursue. So the system went from a batch pipeline that had 5 hours of latency to a system that can have the end-to-end latency sub-second, or in seconds, not sub-second, in seconds. So seconds doesn't sound like real-time, but real-time is always relative to what the business is doing. And in this case, it is sufficient to detect changes in seconds. And the latency denotes the event when somebody clicks on the browser or something is rendered, till the data is visible in the backend system for analysis. So that is what end-to-end latency refers to, not just the latency of any one component in that overall pipeline. So with the batch system, it was a matter of hours waiting before the data was available. And that, of course, is a problem when you think when you think about shopping sites and so on, where a lot of things happen in hours, right? Especially on major shopping events like Thanksgiving in the US. And it's very costly not to see certain things that are not working and not be able to make adjustments. And so hours of waiting is really not acceptable in this situation. The first phase was to transition some of the processing to APEX, so the functionality that actually computes aggregates that are useful for reporting and for the other use cases that I mentioned, to convert that into an Apache APEX processing pipeline. But it was impossible in the first phase to change the ingest mechanism, because that is the most valuable or the most sensitive component are ad servers and other components, and it's hard to make those changes instantly. So the ingest pipeline that would move data from ad servers through Kafka queues and through another couple of processing steps until files were eventually landed as part files, including MapReduce processing, by the way, in S3. That stayed intact. So the source was files in S3 that would be continuously consumed, but the latency is high because you wait maybe 10 minutes to deliver such a part file, right? And then the next one. So there's 10 minutes latency there, and then everything else. And again, you have minutes, and 20 minutes is still a long time. Of course, it's an improvement coming from 5 hours, but it's still a lot of time. So at the same time, it delivers value to cut the latency to 20 minutes. Better have 20 minutes than 5 hours, right? Ultimately, the full transition was to go to a full stream processing pipeline, where also the ingest mechanism is changed, where the data comes directly from Kafka into the Apache APEX topology. And all the entire processing chain that is required to first move it from Kafka through Camu, then generate files running a MapReduce job, then put those files into S3 and then take them from there, is cut out at that point. And then you have a real end-to-end streaming pipeline, and you have the latency benefits. So this is phase one, as you see it here. You have the sources for the different logs that need to be processed on the left side. And then you have processing based off the files of S3, right? Readers read them from there, and then the ETL functionality comes into the picture. There's some decompress happening, some filtering. Eventually, they go into a dimension aggregator, and the dimension aggregator is an operator that pre-builds in-memory aggregates that are suitable for reporting. So you have, let's say you want to know for a given advertiser how many clicks there were. So that would be an information that is pre-computed, it's already available. Or you want to know for a given publisher what are the top advertisers that appeared on that site. So those are things that we want to have pre-computed, because we want it available instantly for reporting. So the dimension aggregator is doing that, and then the results of that are stored in a dimension store. A dimension store is an in-memory, just think of it as an in-memory distributed hash table, where you can come with a key later and you can query, give me the result for a given key. Let's say, as I said, two examples, right? Key combination of a publisher and an advertiser, give me the cost, clicks, impressions, and whatnot. So these results are held in memory. Of course, it's fault tolerant too. It needs to be checkpointed. We can't lose the data. And then how do we get access to real-time reporting, right? There's a Kafka is being used to take queries from a front-end system in a PubSub way, channel them into the system, and then the dimension store that has all the data will answer the query. It's a simple key lookup in that case, and the result again goes into Kafka and back into it says here middleware, which is really the front-end system. It's a server that provides the data to the front end. So a REST API that the front end can use, and then it's shown to the user. So this is the query of the in-memory state. At that time, when we first implemented that, this was all custom code, because APEX didn't have those things as pre-built operators. Yeah, the engine was there that could do all of those things, but the in-memory dimension store and the pattern of the queryable state, that was all custom built. Nevertheless, it was working very well, because these queries, they had an amazingly low round-trip time. It was maybe 30 milliseconds from request to response of the current data that is currently available. So second phase was a hybrid where the Kafka input came in for some of the logs and S3 was still used for the remaining. Other than that, the rest of the pipeline the same. You see this dimension store and this query and response mechanism that you already saw in the previous slide is still in place. And finally, in the third phase, then the entire S3 ingest mechanism was gone and everything was read from Kafka. What is also interesting to note is the system is a geographically distributed system. So different regions of the world, they have the edge servers there because they need to be close to where the actual sites are to meet the latency requirements. That means that this system that is running in a hub needs to pull the data from multiple different geographically distributed Kafka clusters into the system and then perform the operation. So the Kafka input, which is an Apex connector, is able then to read from multiple Kafka topics in different Kafka clusters. And that's important because the activity at a given time of the day is different. Let's say in Asia people sleep and in the US they are awake, right? So there is not an even resource utilization, but overall, interestingly, it evens out. If you're able to share the resources that you allocate to the Kafka consumer, which becomes at some point large if you deal with large clusters, and you can share them across the geographic regions, then you have a better utilization and lower cost. So the Kafka operators read from all of the different data centers. The aggregation happens centrally, and the queryable state or the dimension store is in a central location accessible to the front end. And to the user then, this is the customer's dashboard. This is not part of Apex. They built this front-end system that serves the data of the Apex application. So you can see that there are trends as time series, and there are also top-end computation, and those are the things that the business users want to see. They are able to go into this dashboard and see how certain things perform, and then if they see that certain things don't perform as they expect, they have the ability to react to it. So that is the functionality. Now, for the dimension computation, I said that incoming events, they are somehow aggregated, and then we have the data already prepared in memory to access it very fast for queries. The way this works is, let's say we have this add event, and you see certain fields in here and certain metrics, like number of clicks, number of impressions, and by the way, don't take this serious. This is just an example how the dimension computation works. This is not an actual production record, right? So, and you have the keys. You have the advertiser, and you have location, which is also a key, and the other fields are metrics. And we want to aggregate the metrics to deliver the results to the dashboard. So the way this works is now, aggregators and the aggregates are computed for different combinations. For example, you can see on the top that we compute overall cost for everything. But we may also want to compute the cost per advertiser, which you see here, or we want to have a cost per location. So all of these different aggregates are being computed, and it's also possible to set the aggregator for different combinations to perform different aggregations. Typically, these are commutative and associative operations like sum, max, and so on. So for this given event, you can see how this attributes to multiple cells here, but not to all of them. And this is based on the matching of the key. Of course, it will have to go into the all aggregate, but then it will go by advertiser, matching the advertiser, or matching the location, right? And updates this in-memory state. And now you can imagine that when you send a query that contains the same keys, like let's say Burger King and location Washington, then we are able to access the state very fast and also provide it to the front end. So that's on a high level how the back end works. In terms of scale, we can keep this short, so 6 geographically distributed data centers. Then the total amount of data, of course there is a lot of data and it's very fast growing in the ad tech space too. And so I think now it's processing 40 billion ad impressions per day, and 350 billion bids approximately. So it also get the bid data from the auction. And the average inflow of data would be like 450K events per second. And that is handled through 64 Kafka partitions and 32 instances of that store operator. So this state is distributed over multiple partitions. Not one can, one partition cannot hold all of the state. It's distributed. And then, of course, the streams, both the event streams and the query streams, they are partitioned by key, by the keys that I was talking about. So why is APEX useful for this type of application? APEX provides for state management. It's fault tolerant. It's using checkpointing to save the state to a durable storage, and where it can be used to recover from a failure. It supports exactly once processing semantics, and it supports windowing based on event time. It also has fine-grained recovery or incremental recovery, which allows to bring for a given operator that fails or a given processing unit that fails to only recover that and only reset the dependencies of that versus resetting the entire application. And if you can employ something similar like replication to the processing tool, like speculative execution, then you can use that to achieve an SLA. Because to guarantee a latency SLA, you need to guarantee that even in the event of a failure, topology is restored to function within a given amount of time. It's not just sufficient to say it's fault tolerant, it also needs to do it within the SLA window. And then the queryable state support, if it's stateful and can hold large amounts of state in memory, then it can also provide that to a query as a result. So that's a benefit of a stateful architecture, which APEX represents. It's a native streaming, so low latency processing, high throughput. As I already said, the low latency, you can really achieve very low latency, but not all use cases require that low latency. However, even if you don't require like 10 millisecond latency and things like that, then it's still good to have a system that is efficient with resources, and APEX is that. The processing is pipelined, the data moves through the pipeline versus all the processing going to where the data is, which again would be a bottleneck potentially. And so it scales because it can acquire resources as needed, it can add or move resources. You can implement an application that is elastic using APEX. And then it has the library of connectors and transformations that allows you to build an application reasonably fast. I said that when this use case was implemented, a lot of it was custom code, and that is true. And some of the operations were, of course, there, like reading from files and reading from Kafka. Those were in the library. But other things like the windowing support and the dimension compute and the query state support, they were not there at that time. They were added later. So the rest of the time I want to spend on how would I build something like this and also show you how it works using a demo. So the application for that is something that everybody understands, right? It's reading tweets from the Twitter developer API. And there are two processing paths here. One is a processing path that computes time series, which I'm just going to introduce, and then we're not going to follow that further. So the time series, they take simple metrics, like the number of URLs in tweets, the number of hashtags in tweets, and so on, and provide some metrics as time series that could be visualized. The second pass is what we're going to follow is we want to provide the top N keys, so the top N hashtags of tweets as they occur. So let's look at how this would work, right? There is an input. This here is file input, but in this case, when I run it, it will actually take it from the Twitter API, so there's a tweet sampler instead of the file input. But we could also do this with historic tweets that are stored in the file. Then the conversion to a particular object representation in what I'm going to run has one operator instead of these two, which is just the tweet sampler that gets the Twitter status object. The next operation in the pipeline would be to extract the hashtags. We are only interested in the hashtags here. So we take all of the data that's provided, location and other metadata in the tweets. It's actually a lot of data. When you serialize it, I think it's like, it can be 1K or so as JSON, so it's not small. But all we care here is the hashtags. So we extract the hashtags from the tweet. And the next operation is a windowed operation. It's counting by key. Very simple operation, but it illustrates what the system needs to do, right? We count how many times a hashtag occurs within a given window, and the output of that is the count of unique hashtags for a window, which is provided to the next operation, which is also a windowed operation, because it then determines the top N. You could throw these together and combine them, but this example application is using just atomic operations that are already there instead of writing custom code. So top N is taking the top N unique hashtags and provides it to the next operation, which is a conversion, a simple map operation that makes the data suitable for the following operator, which is a snapshot server. The snapshot server is the piece that responds to the queries that are coming from the front end and provides the results. In this case, what I have done is I have an auto query on the snapshot server because I'm not going to send anything from the UI for this demo, but it will emit the results periodically whenever a new result becomes available from the upstream top end. It will update the snapshot. That's why it's called a snapshot server. It's a table. It has a table, and it emits the table periodically. At the end, let's say every second, it emits the table and to the output, to the console, the sync. So top N hashtags, time series, queryable state. The output is to a WebSocket. In this case, we are using WebSocket to push the data to a PubSub server. The PubSub server is the connection between the application runs on the cluster, right? And the front end is a server with a well-known endpoint. Now the question is, how do they know each other? The binding block is a PubSub server, where the application is the publisher and sends the data for the results. And the front end server is the subscriber that wants to know the results. And if queries are placed, then the front end server is the publisher, and the application that's running somewhere in the cluster is the subscriber. And in addition to that, like in the previous example, when you have many partitions, then the query goes to all of the partitions, and the response comes from the partition that actually has the data. But that's more of an implementation detail that could be solved differently too. And the visualization in the demo, I'm going to use Grafana. So all of the things here that are shown here, they are open source Apex and other open source tools. This would be the code to set up the window, the windowed counting. This looks a little bit long, but let's see why that is the case. So we have to define what the accumulation is, right? It's a sum operation on incoming counts. We also have to say where we store the data. The default, since there isn't a default, we are setting here an in-memory windowed storage. What that means is the data go into the heap memory, and the operator checkpointing saves them for recovery to the disk. That's not suitable for large scale operation, right? When you have a large key space and a high throughput, this will not work. So in that case, you would use a different storage backend that is provided, which handles overflow, storage in HDFS, and so on. It's called managed state. That's also a part of the Apex library. But this is just a demo. It's simple, so we're using this. It's easier to set up too. And then we have to define what the windowing is. In this case, the windowing, which is actually not correct, is setting up a tumbling window. Probably for this purpose that I'm going to show, it should be a sliding window. But this is the window. It's a 5-minute window. And we talked about the storage already. It's using in-memory storage. And the trigger option, finally, we don't want to wait 5 minutes until we see the results. So we want to trigger results periodically. And in this case, set 2 seconds to emit the result panes. And only when they are emitted, they can be updated in the UI. Otherwise, we would see the same data for 5 minutes, and then the backend would provide new data, and we would see that updating, even though the UI refreshes every second. Okay, so maybe it's best if I first run the demo so that we actually see how it works, and then continue with the explanations. So I have the application set up in Eclipse here, and gonna launch it. So I'm running this application in Eclipse. It's not running on a cluster because it's immaterial, really, where it runs for this demo. We want to look at the queryable state. So once I launch this, it will start to push data through the WebSocket, through the PubSub server, and then the Grafana is set up to receive the data. It's visible. So we can look at it in Grafana. And we can also look at it over here. So if I say close and open, I can open the WebSocket connection, and then I can subscribe to the particular topic on which the top hashtags are pushed. And then I see the updates coming in here. Right. And the refresh is the application publishes every 2 seconds. So you see updates every 2 seconds when the tweet counts is low. It's just 1% of the actual Twitter traffic that the developer API provides. But you get the idea, right? You see the tweets ordered by count, the top tweets that are right now provided. So going back to the presentation, oops. So here is the entire setup illustrated again. We get the Twitter feed, the hashtags are extracted, we have the count by key windowed operation, then we have the top end window, then we have the snapshot server. The snapshot server, again, it keeps the latest data. This is a table snapshot, so it's not a time series. Time series would keep more data. Table snapshot, data is in memory, and the query is issued periodically, and the response to that query, when the query is placed, is pushed back through the WebSocket into the PubSub server, through WebSocket. And then Grafana, in this case, is not using WebSocket. I don't think, maybe there is an adapter, but I didn't find any. But what we are using is a simple JSON data source, which can talk to HTTP. So it's using HTTP, which is generally easier to handle also for front end. So this is how you can get the state that the application computes into Grafana. And just like I showed you for top end now, you could do that also with time series. And actually Grafana was written for time series and for monitoring. So the visualization would look more appealing. It's just that I did not complete that in time to show it to you right now. Okay. So check. So how does this work in terms of code? The snapshot server is holding data in memory and responds to queries that come in through a protocol that can be plugged. It could be, like in the AdTech use case, it was Kafka. In this case, it's WebSocket. It has a schema that explains what the different fields are and the data types. It transforms the in-memory state snapshot according to the schema that is provided by the query into a query response. And the query response is, there are a few predefined schemas in the Apex library. One of them is snapshot that we used here for the table, and another is a dimensional schema that is suitable for time series. And pushes that out again through the pluggable protocol. We're using the WebSocket operator here. And the PubSub server is that is also open. It's just a very simple server that takes WebSocket and also understands queries to HTTP. So now Apex, what was recently added and what is the roadmap? So we worked last year on Apex Runner and Apache Beam. Iterative processing was added that can be used for machine learning algorithms. Also, there's an Apache Calcite integration now. It's possible to run SQL, simple SQL queries, because I'm saying simple because right now only element-wise operations are supported. Window operations are not supported yet, not implemented. So you couldn't do group-wise transform like a Krupa key with the SQL right now, but you could do a simple transformation that applies filters and does an enrichment and so on. And also added in the last release is the ability to define custom control tuples or user-defined control tuples, and that will be used for the watermark support. Apex currently, the windowing support in Apex currently uses another layer to push watermarks, which is cumbersome. What was not possible before that is to push the control tuples with a broadcast through the engine without having to do something extra as the application writer. This is not just for watermarks, that also applies for batch use case. So I want to know begin batch, end batch. When the batch ends, I may want to finalize files or I want to flush some data into the data store. And so this is something that is now natively supported by the engine, and then the API on top will take advantage of it. Also the Beam Runner. The Beam Runner needs the same support. Then on the roadmap is to improve the support for batch processing. Also, it is necessary to go beyond YARN in terms of what the underlying cluster managers are on which Apex applications can run stream encryption for streams. And then also the support for Python as a language, because it's quite popular. And sometimes it's hard for people to make a move or transition if they are used to writing code in Python and now suddenly they need a Java development environment. So at least for transition, it is very nice to be able to support existing Python logic and then do that transition gradually. So there are some resources here, and then I would use the rest of the time for questions. Yes, please. How the exactly ones? Semantics and Apex? So the question is, can you tell a bit more about how exactly ones in Apex works, right? So, yes, exactly ones is, sometimes we mean different things by exactly ones, so, and that's why you are asking probably. So, by default, Apex is processing events in an at least once mode. That means you're not losing any data. When a failure occurs inside the pipeline, the failing unit of logic will be restored along with everything that is downstream that depends on it to consistent state. And then the data from that, this is called restore from a checkpoint. So that's why we need a checkpoint, right? We need that state, consistent state snapshot to restore. After the restore happened, the data that was in flight or wasn't fully processed in the DAG, it will be replayed. It has to be replayed. So there are already two interesting aspects there. You need replayable sources to make that work. If the source is not replayable, and Apex has some of those connectors that support that, then the connector itself is responsible to make it replayable. That means it has to spool the data to a log or somewhere else and has to take the responsibility of replaying. So let's say replay is there, is given. Now the checkpoint as applied will be, we run all the events again, we replay them until we reach current. So we end up with the same state as long as the sequence of the events, not the outside events, it has nothing to do with ordering in the stream from the outside, but inside the topology is the same as it was originally. So as the processing is idempotent, we reach the same state. And this is how we reach exactly once within the topology. We have not talked about connectors to the outside world yet because there's more work that needs to be done. So the exactly once results not really exactly once processing, we process multiple times, but exactly once results are given or provided by a replayable source and item put in processing, plus the checkpointing, right? So now when we write to outside systems like Kafka till latest release, or I don't know whether it's already out, doesn't provide transactions, right? So let's say Apex has an operator that is an exactly once output operator for Kafka. The way this works is that the connector itself has to remember what was already written to Kafka to not push duplicates. It does that by acting as both, as a producer and a consumer. When it fails, it goes back and actually goes back to the partitions of the Kafka topic, reads from there, finds out what was already written till which point, and it will not push duplicates into the Kafka topic, right? This works differently when you're dealing with a database. In a database, you can use transactions, right? As long as you can work with the transaction boundary, then you get the exactly once output that way. With files, it works again differently. Files, no transactions, but you have atomic file renames. So the way file output operator in Apex works is that it writes files, writes the temporary files, and when the data is committed, that means something, the engine tells each of the operators in the pipeline, up to this point, data will never be replayed, then it can do an atomic file rename and into the final file name. And this is how it avoids writing duplicate data to file. So the point is that it depends on the external system, how you can achieve exactly once, end-to-end exactly once semantics. End-to-end exactly once is what the user will ultimately care about, because it's not just one piece of the pipeline, but the entire pipeline. Other questions? No? Okay, then thank you very much for attending the talk.